On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am recording. I don't know if you could hear the difference quite yet, but I am recording from the new office. It has a little bit of work to do. The walls are very bouncy, so I have pads coming in over the next couple days to kind of soften the noise a little bit, but for now, you're going to have to kind of live with it. Today's show is a mailbag. It is in response. I would imagine there are some people who were not too happy about the way that the weekend's games went. Luke Walton, I think, has. I don't know if like it's since Byron. I mean, it's tough because Byron is the most recent coach, and that changes everything, and that changes the math, but. It's been a while before Byron that we saw a coach with this little fan support. It's not a tenable situation. So I'm sure he's going to come up as well in these questions. There are a ton to get to though, so I'm just going to dive right in. First question comes from Jay Raw. Hey, my name's Junior from Reno, Nevada. Big fan of the podcast. Thanks. My question to you is. Would you rather the Lakers give up all the young core for Anthony Davis this summer and hope for another big signing? And if yes, who would the other signing be? Or have them let AD go in free agency or trade else? Find another trade to keep the players, I guess? I don't know. It's poorly phrased. And sign the likes of Cousins and Klay Thompson. We need a shooter. Klay is underrated. I don't think Klay is going anywhere. He seems to legitimately really like it in Golden State, and so long as they don't try to underpay him, he's probably going to stick around there for the foreseeable future. In terms of Boogie Cousins and other options, the problem is you look around at some of these options, and either if they are going to leave, there's a destination that seems to make more sense and has been recorded as a higher likelihood. For somebody else than the Lakers, right? So Kawhi Leonard comes to mind. For whatever reason, it's seen as a higher likelihood that Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers than to the Lakers. Now, some of that might be the reporters who are reporting this stuff or are getting information on this stuff. Maybe, you know, the Clippers are just leaking more of that than the Lakers are, and the Lakers aren't really playing the media game. Whatever the case might be, Kawhi is one example. Chris Middleton is another example where, you know, they just paid Eric Bledsoe. So maybe he makes sense for the Lakers. Maybe he gets capped out. But again, you're looking at a team that is a legitimate title contender for the first time since Kareem left, really, right? Like they had those Michael Redd years and whatever. They were interesting, but at that time they weren't beating the Lakers or the Spurs or the Trailblazers, whoever came out of the West. So this is their first time at having a legitimate title contender, and I can't see it. I just can't see an owner looking at that and saying, no, luxury tax payments aren't worth it, right? And if they do say that, then they don't deserve to be an owner. So, you know, you look around at all these free agent options, and it's really hard to find one that makes very much sense for both parties. Obviously, like, Klay Thompson makes a lot of sense for the Lakers, but do the Lakers really make a lot of sense for Klay Thompson? Like, would you go from a perennial title favorite to a team that probably won't be in the playoffs this year? I don't think he does that, right? So we'll see. In terms of like, would I like to trade all the kids for Anthony Davis? I think at this point, Brandon Ingram has shown enough that if he's a part of the trade, you can take one of the other pieces out of the trade. Jason Tatum, as much as we hear about this, he being Tatum and Ingram have gone head to head for the second half of the season. And Ingram has played just as well, if not actually better. So, you know, if Tatum is this end all be all, right? This, I think his name on Twitter is Jason Christ. So if Jason Christ is the end all be all, and there's another player producing just as much and just as well and just as efficiently, while also probably playing better defense, then sorry, right? The Pelicans took this gamble, and we'll see how it turns out for them. Next question here comes from G to the Abe. Hey, Anthony, great show. Congrats on the baby. Thanks. Question, in a 4-on-4 full court game, 3 quarters with referees, who will win? Team one is D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, and Larry Nance Jr. Team two is Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, and Kyle Kuzma. Also, can the Lakers lure away John Calipari in a return to the NBA? Hope you see this. I did. In that game, I probably take, man, it's tough. So the best player in that game right now is D'Angelo Russell. The second best player in that game is probably Julius Randle. But the worst players in that game are Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. So I probably take the Lonzo, Hart, B.I., and Kuzma team just because they're a little more even across the board. Although, you know, Josh Hart, since his knee, since he developed tendonitis in his knee, he has not been able to shoot particularly well. So, and by particularly well, I mean he doesn't make anything. So he's probably technically the worst player out of the group, but it's still like Kuzma, Lonzo, and B.I. are, I think, in aggregate better than D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle, and then, you know, two kind of lower pieces. Can the Lakers lure away John Calipari? Probably not. He's making a lot of money in an uncapped sport where he doesn't even have to pay his employees. Next question comes from Arete32. Hey, Jabari here. I love the show. Thanks. If the Lakers had kept all their young players, including Randle, Russell, and Zubats, they would be championship contenders for the next 10 years. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Who should the Lakers keep more between Ingram or Kuzma or both versus who will they keep? I favor Ingram or both, but don't think they will, unfortunately. Ingram is better than Kuzma. Like, I really hope people understand this because defense matters. Like, it's half the game. So I think, you know, I hope people recognize that Ingram is better than Kuzma and he's younger than Kuzma. So if I had a choice between who I'd rather keep, it's Ingram, and it's not particularly close. That said, the Lakers have done a ton of work to try to hype up Kuzma, both to the fan base and whatever, and he's done a really good job of marketing himself. So, you know, in terms of just basketball, Ingram is the more interesting player. But in terms of full package marketability and all those things, which the Lakers seem to really, really care about, I would imagine they lean towards keeping Kuzma. Also, Magic drafted Kuzma, so that's going to be, you know, that's probably why he's marketed more. Next question here comes from, you know what? I'm going to take a quick second here. Pay a couple bills, and when we come back, I'm going to answer your questions. And like I said, there are a ton of them, so stick around. All right, first question here comes from Fresh0017. He writes, to quote the Mamba, you know, great basketball players don't make great GMs. First off, I'm a Laker lifer from New Orleans. That's interesting. I love Magic Johnson, as does every other Laker lifer, but I think it's time someone said it. The Magic Johnson hire was a mistake. A fish rots from the head down, and I didn't. Is that true? I had no idea if that's actually true. So does that mean, like, on a really big fish, you could technically eat the tail later than the head? That's, you learn something new every day. Anywho, a fish rots from the head down, and this season alone has been rotten thus far. Just think about our trajectory. If we had Jerry West's to lead and not blame, like, a certain chosen player, we went from developing talent this season to scolding that same talent in years, not even months prior to be patient with. We need a leader and finisher, and Magic nor LeBron has done such this season. Thanks. I mean, we've talked about this a ton, you know, in terms of how we feel about Magic and how we feel about Rob Pelinka and their hires and the process that went into them. So, you know, if you really want to say that the fish rots from the head, then it probably goes above both Magic and Pelinka's heads, right? It probably starts with the way that the ownership group has gone since Dr. Jerry Buss passed. That's, you know, and what you're seeing is, so according to all these reports, Magic and Pelinka were a lot less patient with Luke Walton this season, and LeBron James' camp wasn't very patient with Luke Walton this season, and all three of those entities in some way, shape, or form kind of said, they think that the Lakers would be better off with an interim coach or with some kind of change in that capacity. According to all these reports, though, it's been Jeannie Buss who's been kind of pushing up against that, and she has been fiercely loyal to Luke Walton, and that has made it so that he is sticking around. Obviously, he's still employed. So what you have to ask yourself is, if you're Jeannie Buss, you can't have this both ways. You can't say that your hands are off and you absolutely trust Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, and then also turn around and try to hold tight to a head coach whom those two people that you say you trust absolutely want gone. Like, you can't have that both ways. Either actually take your hands off, right, and fulfill the role that you want to do there, or put your hands on and spend more time studying up on the basketball operations side of things, really figuring out, you know, the nitty gritty of running a basketball organization. You can't go. You know, there's no such thing as only kind of going to war, right? Like, that's you can't act as if, oh, you know what, we'll give this a go and we'll see how it turns out with this strategy. And you lose years that way. And unfortunately, one of the years that the Lakers lost happens to be one of the few years they're going to have LeBron. So it's a bummer. And then in terms of, you know, it's been a ton of noise about, you know, LeBron as a leader, as a player, and all these things. I think his abilities as a player are slipping a little bit, which in turn has an effect on his ability to lead, right? Because you can't quite lead by example if you can't set the same example as you lose it physically. And then, you know, he hasn't also made up for it by being a leader in the traditional sense of the word. So all of these things have come together to make for a hugely disappointing season. That Phoenix loss, let's just say, you know, we're lucky that I'm recording this about 24 hours removed from that game, because you guys don't want me to yell at you for 30 minutes. Nobody wants that. All right, next question comes from Cool Guy. Love the show. Helps with my long drives. Drive safe. Quick question. Any chance Magic walks away at the end of the season or LeBron requests a trade? I don't think either of those two things are happening. Magic said that he had... Well, now, if the Lakers strike out completely, they don't walk away with any big-time free agents. Like, to the point where DeMarcus Cousins doesn't even happen, right? Because what we could see happening, and we already saw it this season, where it went from, we're going to hold on to the kids and use our cap space to be able to sign a second superstar free agent, and if we have to, we can acquire a third superstar by trading a couple of the kids. And yet, this last trade deadline, the reports were, and sorry, Jeannie, if you say fake news, it just makes you look more guilty. Like, this is just an unequivocal rule. But anywho, if you paid attention to the trade deadline, you saw a team show desperation in ways that we haven't seen the Lakers really show in years past. And that, to me, was the first part of a tell. I've used the poker analogy a couple times before, but just imagine you're noticing a trend from another player, right? Not that you definitely have a tell on them, not that you definitely have your finger on the pulse of whatever that player is thinking. You're starting to get it a little bit. And I think we got there with the way that this trade deadline was handled, where we're starting to understand what else might be going on there. Next question. Let's take one more, and then we will pay a couple bills. Davin 112. Oh, and then about LeBron requesting a trade, that won't happen, because that would be him admitting that this was a failure and this was a bad idea. Davin 112 wants to know, when Luke gets fired in the offseason, who should the Lakers have as a new head coach? Mark Jackson, Jason Kidd, maybe Phil Jackson. Never mind, he's too old. It's funny that, like, in the same question. Nope, that was my bad. But look, I've said this a couple times. I don't care so much about the name, the person that they hire, though, you know, there are better hires than others. Don't get me wrong. But what I want to see is, I want to see process. That's all I want. Just show me, you know, take your time, find the actual best candidate, find multiple best candidates, and interview all of them. Some of them multiple times, right? You bring them in, and what the Lakers need to do, especially as a young organization, and by young organization, I don't mean, you know, dating back to yesteryear. I mean, rookie basketball, president of basketball operations, rookie GM, fairly young owner, who in Jeannie Buss's capacity. Now they're going to be firing Luke, so, you know, you might get older, just inherently, because you're going to hire probably an older coach. But you look across the entire organization, it's a lot of relative youth. And what I would like the Lakers to do is, don't just interview candidates for their sake, right? Where they get to hear what you're prioritizing and all these things, but also learn. You can learn as an interviewer about the process of what goes into hiring a good or finally making a decision on a good interviewee. I was a head coach for a while. At a high school, and I had my own program, and I had to go out and I had to hire an entire staff basically on the fly. And now I had some people that I brought in whom I felt comfortable with, but I also, there were lower level jobs that I had to fill. There were assistant coaching jobs on my own staff that I had to fill. And I looked at that as an opportunity to learn more. It was a first time head coaching gig, right? I'd coached like a couple years in JV and I did some assistant coaching on varsity teams. But in terms of running an entire program, that had never been a thing for me before. And so in talking to these assistant coaches, I did what I could to learn as part of that process as well, because I needed to do all the learning I possibly could. And now I'm not equating running a public school high school basketball program to running the freaking Lakers. But, you know, I just think in general, I don't think the Lakers do enough to open themselves up to learn learning in general. I would like for them to do a little bit better job of that. Next question here comes from Dr. Mike in Vegas. Love your show. Have been listening regularly for a couple years now. Thanks. Very entertaining. I try. Here's my question. If or when the Lakers miss the playoffs, there will be a lot of blame to go around. If you could adjudicate it, how would you rank the amount of blame between the following six? A, LeBron. B, the veterans / one-year guys. C, the Laker kids. D, Luke. E, Robin Magic. And F, bad luck, injury bug. Okay, I'm glad you included that. I think it's important to include that for just full-on context. F, in this case, being bad luck and injuries. So I would say about 25% bad luck and injuries. The reason it's a little lower than you would probably anticipate is because, well, everybody deals with injuries. The Houston Rockets were missing Chris Paul for a good chunk of the season. Kevin Durant, I believe, is currently out as I'm recording this podcast. The Denver Nuggets, I think only last week, had their full starting five together for the first time since like the second game of the season or something crazy like that. You know, and so for all of these teams, it's a matter of adjusting as those things take place. And the Lakers, because of roster formation, and here's where I'll get to the next bit of blame that I'm going to throw around there. So I'm going to give 30% to the front office. I just think you can't put together this. They had 31, I think it was, $31.5 million of cap space to work with this past offseason. And chose to spend it all on JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, Michael Beasley, Lance Stephenson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and they have, in that time, lost Julius Randle, Brooke Lopez, Thomas Bryant, who I believe has the highest field goal percentage in the NBA, which is insane. Now it's on lower. He hasn't shot as many shots as other really productive players are, but still. Nobody saw that coming, or those who did see it coming don't work for the Lakers. So, you know, they lose Thomas Bryant. They trade away Ivica Zubac, and they acquire a guy, Mike Muscala, who has not been very good since they landed him. Now, they did acquire Reggie Bullock, but in doing so kind of admitted their own mistake, right? And you know, Rob Pelinka tried to spin it and act as if it was, you know, it was in response to other guys getting injured. No, they just didn't have shooters. They needed more shooters. They did a poor job of acquiring shooters in the last offseason, and they had to adjust. And now, you know, credit to them, they adjusted. They did a really good job in landing Reggie Bullock. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, he's in Luke's doghouse. So he, Luke, gets, I would say, about 15% of that. And that puts me at 30 plus, I think I'm at 60% right now. 60% has been allotted. So from there, I would probably give, you know, a good 15% to LeBron, and the way that he handled the trade deadline and the way Rich Paul handled the trade deadline and whatever is left over, I would say the rest of the blame goes to the veterans, who have all been almost essentially unmitigated disasters. So I think my math is okay there. I kind of lost track of the addition midway through adding all that up. And what I wound up doing there, I don't know if you caught it, was just saying, "Well, yeah, but it was we'll say it's the rest. The rest is to the veterans." So that's the key. Round up. Next, let's take one last break here, and when we come back, I'm going to rapid fire through the rest of your guys' questions. All right, the next question here, the first question of segment three, is from Pope1112313. They want to know if I have watched the last 8 years of the playoffs. Yes, I have. Cool. Next question comes from JR61194. Not really a question, but it's crazy what a difference 3 to 4 months makes. Our quote-unquote savior center is now the worst of the three, and the best one was so previously unplayable and is now not even on the team. Admit you thought Zoo was unplayable too. I did. I didn't. I wasn't thrilled with what I saw from Zubats, though. He's been kind of up and down for the Clippers, which I think we're still a year or two away from knowing what Zubats is. I think those who are patting themselves on the back for sticking with him, you can you know, puff your chest out a little bit, but I wouldn't go so far as to say like he figured it out and anybody who dared question him was idiots. Now that might just be me being a biased idiot. Sorry. But yeah, no, that's really what it comes down to. Look, those 3 to 4 months that you mentioned make a big difference when, you know, you mentioned the quote unquote savior center, and this is in reference to Tyson Chandler. He was old. Your savior center should never have needed to save anybody. And he did. And he got them through a good 10, 15, 20 game chunk and helped tread water when the roster was really poorly put together. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. Unfortunately, though, he died at some point along the season. That's unfortunate. And you know, you could do the inverse here with JaVale, where he looked really, really good, and then he got sick, and now he's moping, and he has never found a way to recapture that level of play that he had displayed earlier in the year, and it really hurts the Lakers. Next question here comes from corporate cardholder LeBron in year 17 versus Kobe in year 17. Hi, Anthony. Love your show. Thanks. Listen to it every morning before work. I think Pete is an excellent addition as well. I think so too. This question is for both you and Pete. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hold off on this one, and I want to save as many of these as I can to be able to answer them with Pete. But I'm guessing they want to know, they want us to stack up Kobe and LeBron in years 17. Next question comes from ZB23 Beast. Hey, Anthony, love the show. Got into an argument with my friend after Brandon Ingram was snugged from the top 25 under 25 league list. I looked at stats, and Brandon's numbers compared to Giannis at age 21 are very similar. Do you think this is an acceptable comparison? I don't think Brandon will be as good as Giannis, but they have similar play styles, and Brandon can actually make a jumper. Thanks, and go Lakers. Giannis was a lot faster. He is a lot more explosive than Brandon Ingram. So that's worth pointing out too. The other thing, if you go back and you look at Giannis at age 21 versus age like 23, he got jacked. Like his type of muscle growth is not normal. And I just don't know if I necessarily see Ingram putting on weight in the same way. And allowing, because the other thing too is Giannis was crazy explosive. He puts on that weight and is still just as, if not more, explosive. It's insane. He's a freak of nature. That's why he's called the Greek Freak. So you know, I think there are some mitigating factors here for Giannis versus Ingram. Though I will say that, you know, that type of jump happens every so often. More often than not, it does not happen in the same kind of way. But Ingram has shown enough, I think, over the last month or so to at least get people to believe that he's capable of yet another step forward next year. And those players who take steps forward in year five, four, or five, tend to be special players. Like it's players who continue to get better as they get into, you know, their fifth year, half a decade into their career. Like those guys tend to really figure it out as the years go along, and I'm hoping Ingram does the same. Next question here comes from T. Bryant. More Pete Zayas episodes, please. Dump other guests and have just Pete and me daily. Chemistry, intelligent takes, and breakdowns make you two truly dynamic duos. Alone, not so much. Well, it's great for this show. comparable to Batman and Robin. Strike that, more like Pinky in the Brain. Oh, man, that makes me Pinky. Damn it. And I mean that in a good way. Go watch. I know the show. Keep Pete on, but more than 1 to 2 times each week. We're going to try to make this work next season where, you know, we'll get to next season when we get to it. But I do appreciate all the kind words. Next question comes from Wade362. Anthony, I am kind of a stats junkie and noticed you have misstated Reggie's and Brandon's net rating on the Pelicans wins. When I look at NBA.com, the net rating for each of those players was plus 3.5 for Reggie and negative 0.1 for Brandon. Actually, Kuzma had the highest for anyone playing more than 30 minutes at 5.1. Also, as an FYI, since the All-Star break, Kuzma has had the highest net rating 3 of the 4 games among those players playing 30 minutes or more. Best regards, Wade. For one thing, those numbers adjust on a nightly basis, basically, anytime the Lakers play. So we might have just been looking at different times. I'm pretty sure I read those numbers correctly. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I'll usually tweet out these numbers, and if they're wrong, I usually get person after person after person yelling at me about how I failed to read math, right? So maybe I have it wrong. And maybe in those single game, see, this is where I also, you know, anytime I talk about single game net rating, I make sure to tell everybody that, you know, huge disclaimer here that single game net ratings can be hugely flawed. And so if you just go game by game, then sure, maybe that's the case. But in aggregate, I'm almost positive Ingram and Reggie Bullock have been more impactful. But maybe I just suck at math. I'm ducking dyslexic. Next question here comes from Money Micah. What's up, Anthony? Would you assume what would you assume would be the Lakers' overall record if Kobe would have returned to the Lakers this year, and what would the starting five be? Well, Kobe would be in the starting five, and he isn't as good at this, like, right now as the people who he would be starting over, and that would make the Lakers worse. Plus, he'd have the weird dynamic between him and LeBron would be passive, and then Kobe would be aggressive in his criticisms of the team. It would just be, it would have been a disaster. I would have watched, though. Whatever. QBreezy12 wants to know, as captain of the D'Lo and Randall fan clubs, I'm right there with you. Where do you see them playing next year, and on what type of contracts? Also, is Ingram Giannis with a jump shot? We got to stop with that stuff, you guys. Giannis is heading towards being the best player in the NBA before he turns 24. He might already be there. He's having an MVP season right now. And we already did this, man. We compared Ingram to Kevin Durant before Ingram played a professional game. And all that did was put expectations at way too high for Ingram. There was no way that was going to work out. And then he didn't meet those expectations. And people thought he sucked. And you know, to a certain extent, he wasn't particularly good, even in a vacuum. But still, like, now that he has played a little, he's had a nice stretch here, we can't just throw these expectations and these hopes into unrealistic places. It just doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't do Ingram any good because there's no way he meets those expectations. It doesn't do us any good because it makes it hard to enjoy any progress that he does make. You just let Ingram be Ingram. Allow that to happen. We can't just, hey, look, he was skinny, and then he was skinny, and he was close to 7 feet tall, and he's close to 7 feet tall. There you go. They're the same player. That's not how this man. That's not how this works. These guys are all individuals, and they're all going to follow different paths, and they're going to get better at some stages of their careers where other people stagnated, and then other people might have gotten better earlier on in their careers than the people that you watched kind of trudge through the first couple of years of their career. Like, that's just how these things go. It doesn't do anybody any good to keep on going back to that well of, well, he's definitely going to beat. He's Giannis with a jump shot. Can you realize that Giannis with a jump shot would be an unstoppable force? Maybe the most dominant player in the history of the sport. He'd be up there. Right? Giannis with a jump shot was basically prime LeBron. You think Ingram's going to be prime LeBron? Sorry. In terms of where do I think Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell go, I think Russell stays in Brooklyn. They really, really seem to like him. And he's a restricted free agent, so maybe somebody offers him a crazy contract and he gets maybe a little overpaid. Randall is probably going to opt out, and I hope he goes to San Antonio. I really do. I think that makes a lot of sense for him. That culture just seems to match up with a lot of the things that he seems to value. Next question goes from Laker for Life. Go Lake Show, go. Hey, fan of the show. Just got done watching the Lakers lose to the Bucks, and man, I'm lost for words overall for the season. I have to admit, I finally get what you're saying with the Magic and Pelinka stuff. The decisions they made in their short time with the team are terrible, and at this point, I feel like saying fire them along with Luke, even though I know they won't fire Magic. The only thing we have left is watching Ingram's development for now, as it seems we probably won't make the playoffs And man, if Magic trades Ingram this summer, I'm going to officially hate GM Magic. I've been real invested in the young guys, and I want D'Lo and Ingram more than anybody on draft night for both of their classes. And after shipping D'Lo, worst thing Magic could do is trade Ingram with him looking like he's finally figuring it out. Especially after how the Pelicans treated the Lakers, I would offer everything but Ingram. Me being young, most of my teenage young adult life, the Lakers have been in rebuild mode, and I've only seen the Lakers win two rings, so I'm obviously going to be more invested in the young players. What's your thoughts on Ingram being off limits, and what the Lakers can do to turn this around? I don't think there's any turning it around. You don't lose to a team like Phoenix without being broken beyond repair. I just don't think that happens. If there was something that they could do to turn it around, it would be firing Luke. Not just from a, all right, the Lakers need a change standpoint, but from a, I legitimately wonder sometimes, based on his rotations and substitution patterns, if he's trying to get fired. I think he wants out, man. It's been Byron-esque. His coaching ability has fallen off of a cliff and has been Byron-esque. In terms of keeping Ingram, look, either if you keep Ingram, that means you're giving up literally everything else probably for Anthony Davis. If you include Ingram, you might be able to keep two pieces. So I don't know how you handle that. But I understand people who are adamant that the Lakers should keep Ingram at this point. I get it. Next question comes from Isaac Snook. Snook? Jimmy, Sippy, Swimmy, Swanson. Samsonite. It was always right there. Dumb and Dumber's the best. What do you think of this lineup the rest of the season? Bonga, Hart, Ingram, Kuzma, Moe, Lonzo, and LBJ. So the lineup would be Bonga, Hart, Ingram, Kuzma, Moe. Lonzo and LBJ should sit the rest of the season. Also, other than Bullock, Rondo, KCP, and Lance McGee and Chandler should be gone next season. Well, that's for sure. Rondo, KCP, Lance McGee, and Chandler are all gone. I don't see any scenario here where any of them come back. And if they do come back, whew, that'll be a fun show. In terms of the lineup that you talked about, look, the league is not going to make the stink that they've made with the New Orleans Pelicans and having to play Anthony Davis and then turn around and allow the Lakers to sit LeBron. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, we can laugh, we can joke on all these things, but at the end of the day, whoever is healthy will play within reason, and the Lakers will finish out the season, hopefully on some kind of high note. It probably won't involve making the playoffs, but you know, just so long as Ingram and Kuzma continue their strong play, maybe Hart starts playing a little bit better. That'd be nice to see. Lonzo comes back and regains some of what we saw before his injury. Just as long as those guys take steps forward this season, that's really all we can hope for, because, you know, it's hard not to feel like this season's basically over. Next question here. Glad you asked this. Vontae35 wants to know, can you put into context how big a disappointment this season has become? It's the most disappointing season of my life that I can remember. I put it even higher than the Dwightmare season. You know, that Dwightmare season, the Lakers made the playoffs. And in that Dwightmare season, Nash broke his leg. Obviously he was never Steve Nash, but he didn't do much for the Lakers that season or moving forward. Obviously Kobe snaps his Achilles at the end, so the postseason that they got into, they got swept, and it never felt even relatively close between them and the San Antonio Spurs. This season, so that season, I had higher expectations. I thought that team made a lot of sense. Steve Nash is as a, you know, he can handle the ball and handle the pick and roll with Dwight Howard. He could handle the pick and roll with Pau Gasol. If he wasn't handling the ball, then he could also space the floor with his ability to shoot. I thought Ron Artest made a lot of sense just from a 3-and-D standpoint. And then you had other guys to fill out the rest of the roster as such. Unfortunately, that season played out about as poorly as you could have possibly imagined. That said, this season to me has been worse. They aren't going to make the playoffs. Like, not making the playoffs in a LeBron James season is, it's effing criminal, man. All right, next, we gotta pick things up here a bit. Last three questions. Laker fans, you're not alone. Beer and Tall Buildings wants to know, from Anthony's next level analogies to Pete's best in class analysis of the game, check out his Laker film room too. He will 100% bump up your basketball IQ. These guys are both fans and critics, offering equal parts subjective and objective commentary on the team. Thanks, man. Being a fan of this squad is never easy. It's great to have reassuring voice to remind you you're not alone. Question for the fellows finally seems timely. With the Lakers losing luster as a free agent destination of late, aren't we better off retaining current talent, B.I., Hart, Kuzma, Bullock, and building a complete roster with a mix of rising stars and role players rather than another max superstar, i.e. Kemba, Wayne Ellington, or God willing, he'd take us back, Julius Randle. In short, focusing on the next decade, not just LeBron's window. The problem is, if you do that, then you're kind of crapping on the agreement that LeBron and Magic made upon LeBron's arrival. And, you know, I don't think Magic wants to renege on that. So I get it. In general, like, what the last thing I want to see, I'd be hugely disappointed next season if the Lakers go into that following year with a bunch of one-year contracts again. This is now 6 years of this, right, where the Lakers hope that these guys on one-year contracts all just buy into being Lakers and care about the long-term health of the organization. Like, that's not how this works. And we already, like, I had a tweet do pretty good work, pretty good numbers over the weekend, and the premise of it was Rudy Gobert said something along the lines of, like, Quinn Snyder was his coach was right to bench him. Favors was outplaying him, and he's going to make it up to the team on the next game, right? And would you ever hear that coming from JaVale? Like, he moped outwardly to the point where the Lakers felt like they had to trade Zubats to get rid of him or to up his interest in playing hard for the team. Like, that's not great. You know, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that these guys are on one-year deals and they're trying to secure their long-term future in the NBA. So on one hand, I can kind of get it. But on the other hand, you need to start building a culture. Next question comes from D3DS. Hey, Anthony, in no way is Luke Walton blameless. So basically the question here is, or the point here is that I'm too hard on Luke Walton. I'm not too hard on Luke Walton. His performance over the last week or two has been laughable. Last question. I was thinking about this, and I think it's a good question. Who would you rather build around, Jokic or Luka? Luka, he's younger, and he plays a more important position to me. Also, would you rather have Jesse Buss in the front office instead of Magic or Rob? So I think I'd like to see how the front office would run if you handed the keys over to Ryan West and Jesse Buss. But if you're going to do that, sorry, I've moved all day today. I am on fumes. If you're going to do that, then I would like for them to employ an older, like somebody with a lot more experience to help teach them the ropes and how the league actually works. I think one of the major disappointments this year with the way that the front office was put together was that neither Magic nor Rob Pelinka had a realistic view of the way the league was going to work. I think that remains the case. Until that changes, until they recognize that they need to think of things a little differently, the Lakers are screwed. All right. That'll do it for this episode. Long episode of a Mailbag Monday for you guys. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. That helps me keep these new lights up. But we will recap the Lakers playing the Clippers Monday night. It's a big one. If the Lakers, their chances are slim and none, I think, at this point, and heading towards none. But if they do want a chance at this stuff, they really have to beat the Clippers Monday night. So we'll see how that goes. For now, though, this is Anthony Irwin telling you guys to have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.